You're listening to Better Than Fiction with your hosts, D.L. Nelson and Scott Sackett.
All right, welcome back to Better Than Fiction, your pop culture podcast. As always, I'm your host, D.L. Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
And this will be episode 520.
Woo! I should have known, because last one was 519, but I was waiting for you to say 523.
Oh, okay.
So
I thought you were just like,
whatever.
I see you got a stack. I got a stack. You want me to go first? You want to go first? I don't care.
Let me go first.
All right.
I'll talk about a movie. Well, first off, so, you have a lot of Criterion movies?
I think I've only got about two.
Really?
Yeah.
That's shocking. I don't have a lot. I have more than two.
Right.
You got a box
that just got like five in it.
I have the Bruce Lee box set. Right. I have the Akira Kurosawa Samurai that has Yojimbo and two other samurai movies. I have the Seven Samurai. And occasionally I'll run across them cheap and I'll pick them up.
Yeah.
So I was in, of all places, a thrift store.
Yeah, you found that thrift store.
And I found this Criterion movie. I didn't know anything about this movie, but it was like a buck. I mean, it's got this, you know, they always do color coded. It's got it was half price.
Yeah.
It was normally $2, I believe. I think I paid a buck. And I was like, you know what?
That's a deal.
I'll buy this. And it was called Night Train to Munich. And it's got a drawing on the cover, no photo, because it's Criterion, so it's special art, of a cliff or two cliffs. And there's a
cable car,
and there's a guy hanging from one of them. And it's a silhouette, kind of a... I didn't even realize until right now, but there's a swastika in the sky.
Oh, I didn't notice that either.
I didn't notice that until right now.
But it is Munich.
It is Munich.
They still do that.
I don't know if I even... I think I may have read the back. It said Carol Reed, who I don't really know who that is, but he's a famous director.
Oh, I thought it was a girl.
Carol Reed, might be a he for all I know. Carol Reed's Night Train to Munich is a twisting, turning, cloak and dagger delight combining comedy, romance, and thrills with the greatest of ease.
Oh.
That is probably all I read. And I was like, you know what? I'll buy it for $2 or a buck or $3 or whatever it was.
Right.
It was cheap. It was under $5.
Right.
And so I bought it, and it kind of sat there. And so the other night I thought, I should watch that movie.
Yeah.
And so before I watched it, I watched a trailer on YouTube because I was like, I want to make sure, or maybe I read something about it. But it was like, okay, this is good. It takes place in World War II.
I thought they're still doing the Nazis thing in Munich.
Yes, this takes place in 2018, and there are Nazis in Munich, and they're on their way to
Hamburg.
To Hamburg. And they're going to round up some people. Anyway,
so this is an old movie.
Yeah. No, this is an old movie.
Okay.
But I am a big fan of what I would call...
Nazi movies.
Thriller. No, thriller. So there's a writer that I like named Eric Ambler. Eric Ambler wrote... He had a career like pre-World War II... writing spy novels.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in one of the James Bond books, he takes an Eric Ambler book with him on a plane to read it when he's going somewhere. I don't know where, but in one of them he reads it, and he mentions that he likes reading Eric Ambler. Eric Ambler, like five of his books were converted into movies, or were made into movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I say all this because there's one called The Mask of Dimitros that I want to watch because Jim Steranko said he watched it as a kid and it made a huge impression on him. It was one of the first movies he ever saw. It's based off of a book called Coffin for Dimitros. Anyway, all this takes place pre-World War II, but I say all that to say spy movies were different before James Bond came along.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about in the past about how the Bourne Identity movies changed spy movies because they're more action. The action is more like MMA inspired, more parkour inspired,
right,
more that kind of thing, versus say like 70s or 60s James Bond, where there was violence and there was some like karate kind of stuff, but it wasn't near. I mean, you know, for Russia with Love, there was a fist fight on the train that was pretty brutal, but it was different than what came after. And so pre-James Bond, spy books and movies were a little bit different. That brings me to Night Train to Munich. It is a thriller in that kind of vein. It was written, or it was filmed in 19... Well, it says here 40, but I thought it was 44. I thought I...
This was
during World War II.
This is during when the Nazis were really...
This was made during World War II.
Yeah.
Yes. So, it was during the war. So, the...
Does it have, like TV footage? Like
No.
Doesn't have any of that. Okay.
No. So, it takes place in 1939... takes place when the Nazis are marching into Czechoslovakia.
Okay.
So this movie had relevance to me because I'm half Czechoslovakian. So I had to get that, root for the home team, so to speak.
Sure.
Anyway, there's a scientist, his last name is Bo Mash, and he's working at this thing, and they're hearing the president of Czechoslovakia comes on the radio and he goes, Nazi troops are pouring over the border. You know, everyone, you know, everything will be fine. Stay in your house. Do this. You know, you might stock up on food, whatever. You know, it's this typical kind of thing. It's like, oh, you know, it's come to this. And the guy's like, okay. And so Bomash, his first name is Axel. Axel Bomash calls his daughter Anna. And he says, you've got to get to the airport. Meet me at the airport. He goes, we've got to get out of here. Because this is scientists, like his group around him are like, you've got to get out of here. The Nazis are going to grab you if they know you're here. Because he is working on a new type of armor plating. It's like the best type in the world. And so they're like, you've got to get out of here. The Nazis are going to grab you and torture you until you tell them I make this armor plating.
Mm-hmm.
So he calls his daughter. He's like, you got to get to the airport. She's like, okay, let me. So his daughter, you know, she lives in this big house. She's like, tells the housekeeper, I've got to go to the airport. Help me get some things together. And she's like, what's going on? And she's like, nothing. I'm getting out of Czechoslovakia. So she packs up some stuff. It's getting ready to leave and goes to the door. It's too late. The Nazis grab her.
Oh, wow. They knew where they lived.
They were coming for him. They wanted him. He makes it to the airport and he's like, you know, looking at his watch going, where's he at? And the pilot's like, we got to get out of here, man. The Nazis are getting ready to overrun the airport. And so he doesn't want to do it, but he has to take off without his daughter. They're going to England and mm-hmm. she knows they're going to England, but he just tells her we got to get out here and go to England. She doesn't know where, she doesn't know anything about that. So she gets taken to a concentration camp. And she gets interrogated by the Nazis, and she's like, I don't know. He went to England, but I don't know anything. So she gets put in this concentration camp. The girls' camp is here, and there's a barbed wire fence, and the boys' camp is over here. And so she meets this guy named Carl, who's in the boys' concentration camp. And they kind of become friends. And so he tells her that he's a teacher, and he was in prison because of his political ideas. And so he tells her that he's got a plan to escape. And so they escape and they are able to get by boat to London.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go to London. He goes, I have a contact in London. And so he goes, he's like, I've got to go to this doctor. And so he's like, you wait here and this guy will help us find a place to live and that sort of thing. So he goes up there, and so, like, it's late at night, and so it's an eye doctor, it's an optometrist. He's, like, helping somebody, and so his nurse comes in, and he goes, you've got someone here to see you. And he goes, this is my last patient. And she goes, no, they insisted, they've got to see you right now. And he goes, okay. And so he tells the lady, here, go get some glasses or whatever, and sends her off. And so the guy comes in. And they do, and I forget exactly what they said, but it's kind of like the old, you know, the sky is blue at night. And it's like, yes, but the grass is green in the summer, you know, kind of a code, mm-hmm. a back code kind of thing. And the guy's like, oh, okay. And then he goes, Hell Hitler. And he goes, Hell Hitler. Mm-hmm. And so you realize the guy she escaped with was actually a Gestapo agent.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of a trick.
A plant, yeah.
And you realize what's going on. So this guy... They go to a boarding house and they rent rooms there. They're not staying together, they're separate rooms. And So, and you can tell the guy's trying to kind of like, you know, woo her, as they say, but she's not really into him or whatever. So, the guy tells her, because she's like, how will I ever find my dad? And he goes, well, place an ad telling, you know, saying, and I forget exactly what the ad said, but she puts an ad in the paper, you know, in the personal column, you know, and there's something, she didn't say her name or his name, but it's something that, and it's like, he said, use a nickname that only he knew or something, you know, is like, mm-hmm. Daddy, you know, little angel is looking for you, contact P.O. Box, whatever. Well, so she does that, and nothing really happens. Well, then, like, one night, or maybe it just says you're in the country. We made it to England, I think is what she tells him, or something. I forget what she tells. I don't know. She may have put the phone number. But anyway, so it's one evening, like, she's in her room, and he's in his room, and their rooms are, like, next to each other. And so he hears the phone ring, and hears somebody knocking on the door, on her door, and they go, oh, you got a phone call. You know, and so she goes down the hall. And so he knows she's got a phone call, so he's like, okay, somebody called. And so she comes running, and so on the phone, this guy tells her, she answers, she's like, Dad, and he's like, no, you're going to go tomorrow, go to the post office, mm-hmm. and there's a letter for you. Open the letter, and there'll be a train ticket. Don't tell anyone anything about this. Take the ticket, get on the train, get off at this town. I forget the name of the town. It's a British town. Go to this town and ask for a guy named, I'm looking up his name, Gus Bennett. Ask for Gus Bennett. She goes, where will I ask? And he goes, everybody in that town will know Gus Bennett. And so the guy hangs up. So she goes to her room. She goes, I've got a lead on my father. And she goes, he goes, well, where are you going? Where's he at? And she's like, oh, they told me not to tell anybody. He goes, well, don't you trust me? And she's like, they told me not to tell anybody. I'm not going to tell anybody, but I've got to go to the post office tomorrow. So she goes to the post office. She gets the thing. It's go to this town. It's like a seaside resort kind of town. And so she takes the train. She gets there, and she asks the guy. And the guy's like, oh, everybody knows who he is. He's that guy on the boardwalk that annoys everybody. And he's the guy on the boardwalk, and what he does is he has a PA, and he sings these songs that he wrote, and his gimmick is he's selling the sheet music. Mm. You know, this is kind of a big thing back then. You'd buy sheet music because everybody knew how to play the piano and that kind of thing. So he's singing these, like, romantic songs or whatever, and he's, like, selling, you know, people are kind of like, whatever, and he's like, duh. And so she goes...
Wait, was the guy in the room didn't go with her or follow
no,
her?
No. Well, no, he didn't follow her. So... Hmm. So so she goes there. Well, then she tells the guy, she goes, oh, I was told to contact you. Well, then he goes, wait here. And so he does his routine. At the end of the day, he takes her to this hotel, and her dad is there. And her dad has been working for the British government at this island off the coast there. And so that's why he's in the seaside town. And so she's there with her dad, kind of find out that the singing guy is like a British agent. Mm. And so that's just kind of what he does, where they can send people to, you know, to contact or whatever. And so his name is Dickie Randall.
Dickie.
He's Dickie. So her dad is doing the thing, and she's with Dickie, and she's there. And so she's trying to write a letter to the guy that she left, that Marston guy. And he's like, you can't write him a letter. And she's like, no, I'm not going to tell him where we're at. I just want to tell him that I'm safe. And he goes, no, if he sees the postmark, he'll know where you're at. You can't tell anyone. And she's like, no, you don't understand. He helped me escape from prison. He's like, no, you can't write him a letter. And so what she doesn't realize is the eye doctor had trailed her, had followed her. This guy hadn't followed her. He had contacted, she never saw the eye doctor, so she didn't know who the eye doctor was, because she didn't go in the office with him. Mm-hmm. He told the eye doctor followed her from the post office to the train station to the seaside town. Mm-hmm. So he knew what was going on, and so he contacted Marston, the Gestapo guy, and so they're, you know, normally they take this boat out, so the boat comes to get him. And the boat goes, the guy's like, and so, like, the doctor, the scientist, is going to take his daughter to the base. So so the daughter and him are there. They get on the boat. They go along. All of a sudden, there's like a German sub. Because he's like, we're not going towards the island. It's like, nope, here's where we're going. And they go to the German sub. So that guy's there. He's like, oh. And it's like, oh, I was a, you were, a, it's like, oh, he was a double agent. And so they take him to Germany. Or, I'm sorry, they take him to Czechoslovakia. And so they are going to, they take him to Berlin. Sorry, wrong. Mm-hmm. They go to Berlin. Mm-hmm. And they're going to, and they're trying to get the scientist to work on the to work on the armor for him, and he won't do it. And so the daughter's there, and they're trying to. So what happens is Dickie is like, holy crap. Well, Dickie apparently, you know, he was an undercover agent. He had been to Germany, had a lot of contacts in Germany. He's like, I've got to go save him. And so next thing you know, they're in this German office, and here comes Dickie, and he infiltrated the building, and he's posing as like a German Corps of Engineer guy, and he's like, I'm responsible for these two because I've got to get the, and so they're like, well, why were you sent to take them? He goes, because 4 years ago, her and I had an affair, and he tells them, the scientist's daughter, the daughter and him are there. But he's like, well, we had this thing going on 4 years ago, and he tells him, I'm gonna convince her to convince her dad, and so that's why I've been sent on this mission.
And they're believing his German's that good.
That's one thing. It's like none of these people really look German, you know?
And they're not speaking German either.
They're not. None of them are speaking German.
It's a good English production.
So he goes to. So he's there. So he goes to the girls. They got the girl, and I don't know if they're in a hotel or what. I think they're in a hotel, but they've got guards and stuff. So he tells them, well, I got to go to a room to talk to her if I'm going to woo her over to our side. Mm-hmm. And so he goes there, and he tells her, like, what's going on? He's like, she's like, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, I came to rescue you guys. He's like, what are you going to do? And he goes, well, I got a plan, but we're going to get out of here in the morning.
This is the Bond guy.
He's the Bond guy in the movie. I guess.
There's still no trains yet. Where's this train at?
Well, we're coming onto the train. Mm-hmm. So he tells her, he's like, well, I've got to convince him that I've convinced you, mm-hmm. and that we're going to go, and I'm going to take you to the Fuhrer, who apparently is in Munich, by the way. So you think you'd be in Berlin, but anyway. So he tells her, he's like, well, I've got to stay the night in the room. So he's like, I'll flip you for the bed or the couch, you know. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, okay, you know. So he stay anyway, so he's in the room, and like about in the middle of the night, there's... Mm-hmm. And he's like, what? And he gets up and he's like, what's going on? What's the meaning of this? And they're like, we've got orders from Hitler to take her and her father to Munich right now. And they're gonna go on this train. That's the night train to Munich. Mm-hmm. Middle of the night train to Munich. They gotta get on this train to Munich. And so he's like, well, I mean,
Hitler don't know who you are either.
Well, no, that guy's like, no, wait a minute. My orders are that I'm in charge of them. And they go, well, you can come with us. And so he goes with them. So they're on a train. It's one of those kind of trains where there's an aisle, and there's like rooms. They're not really like overnight rooms. They're like two bench seats facing each other. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I don't know what you call that on a train.
It's the regular.
It's like a regular thing. Well, but it's not like a train. Like, it's not rows of seats on a big. It's the step up from that. Mm-hmm. And so they're there. They're on the train, and so it's Dickie, Anna, Axel, her dad, and what was it? Marston, the German guy, the Gestapo agent. It's them, and then there's a group of Nazis in the, like, soldiers, or maybe they're Gestapo soldiers in the car in the little room next to them. Well, so they're going along. Well, at one point, the train they go along, and at one point, these Germans get on the train, and they're like, everybody off the train. They go, we're commandeering this train for troop transport to Munich, and we need all civilians got to get off this train. And so we see there's these two British guys. Let me see if I can find their name. I cannot find their name, but there's these two British guys, and they get booted off the train, and they're like in, they were in Berlin on business, and in fact, one of them was going, I've got to get to Munich because I've got to call, I left my golf clubs back in Berlin, I've got to get my golf clubs sent back to England, or something like that. Anyway, so these two guys are kind of milling around, they're trying to figure out what to do, and they see the two Czechoslovakians, the Gestapo guy and Dickie, and the other guy goes, hey, that's old Dickie. He goes, who? And he goes, oh, we were roommates in boarding school back when we were kids. And he goes up to him and he goes, hey, Dickie. And the guy's like, I don't know you. And he's like, oh, okay, never mind. You know, and so he leaves and he goes, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why he's wearing a German uniform, but I know for a fact that's Dickie. Mm-hmm. And so they get booted off the train. So they end up like hopping on the train like hobos because they're like, we got to get to Munich, mm-hmm. you know? And so they're kind of on the train trying to avoid people. Meanwhile, the train is now filled with Nazi soldiers. Mm-hmm. And we've got the scientist, we got Dickie, who's faking being the Nazi guy. We got this Marston, the Gestapo guy.
By the way, Dickie's got to have
a different name.
No, he's got to have a Nuts of Steel at this point.
Dude, I know, because he's like, well.
They're onto me, kind of.
So, maybe. So these two guys are kind of roaming the train, kind of hiding out from everybody, basically.
Yeah.
And the Gestapo guy, like, excuses himself. And he goes back to the train. Oh, and they're trying. That's what the guy's trying to make a call back so he can have his club sent to Berlin. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's trying to use the whatever it is, the radio or the phone or whatever. Well, when he's waiting for it, he hears the Gestapo guy saying, "Yeah, there's a British agent in," and he's telling him this guy's claiming to be a British agent or a German Corps of Engineer guy, but he's actually a British agent, and he said, when we get to Berlin, you need like a squadron of troops ready to arrest this guy. And he goes, all
with the whole train's full of Nazis on this.
I don't know if they don't want to cause a scene, but anyway, so he arranges for that guy to be arrested as soon as they get to Berlin. So this guy overhears that and says, oh crap, I gotta do something. So meanwhile, this guy goes back to the compartment, so it's the four of them in there, and they're kind of chit-chatting and stuff. And the steward comes around. I was like, hey, do you want food? And so they take their orders or whatever. Well, then they're trying to figure, these two guys are trying to figure out what to do. And so they see, like, this guy go, and he's coming back with food. And he goes, hey, hang on just a second. And he gives the guy some money. He goes, hey, I want to give you something. And he's, like, talking. So the one guy's talking to the steward, and the other guy kind of is over his shoulder, and he slips a note in the food.
Mm.
And so he takes the food in there, and he goes, well, how did you know that what Dickie ordered? And he goes, every morning when we were in the boarding house, he ate donuts. And there were donuts, and I bet money that was his. So they're in there, so he's eating, you know, they put down the table, and they're eating, right? And so Dickie and the Gestapo guy are sitting right next to each other, and it's the daughter and son, or the father and daughter across from them. So Dickie grabs a donut, he's eating a donut, and you see like the one with the paper under it. Well, the Gestapo guy sees it, and he goes, "What is that?" And he goes, "Oh, it must be the bill." And he goes, "Oh," he goes, "Don't worry, I'll take care of this." And he sticks it in his pocket. And he goes, I'm going to take care of it now. And so he goes out. Well, what it was, is it was a note, and it said, meet us in the washroom. The jig is up, meet us in the washroom, or something like that. And so he meets them. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, they're on to you. And he goes, oh, man, what are we going to do? And so then you don't see what their plan is. But they come up with a plan. So then they go back in there. So the guy, they get there, they're going along, you know, and they're kind of talking. And the guys, you can tell that guy, the Gestapo guy knows something's up. Dickie now knows something's up. So when they go to get off the train, the Gestapo guy, I think he pulls a gun or he hollers for the guards or something, and the guards come over, and he's telling Dickie, like, yeah, you know, I'm on to you, we're gonna, you know, you're gonna be arrested, we know you're a British agent. What the guy didn't realize is the two English guys have basically overpowered two Germans, and they got their uniforms on. Mm. And so they get him, they, then you see them get the four of them getting off the car, and that Dickie has switched uniforms with the Gestapo guy. So now he's wearing a Gestapo uniform. He goes up there and he goes, oh yeah, you know, the British agent, I had to get rough with him, and you'll find him. He's in the car there. And they go, okay, well, do you want to go in this car? And he goes, no, I don't trust anybody. I want my own men in my car with me. And so the four of them go, and they go, we'll go on ahead. You take care of the spy. And so they go, they take off. Well, then, so they go on the train, and they go to the cart, and they realize, like, the Gestapo guy's tied up, and they're like, you know, he's tied up, he's gagged, he's like, you fools, you let him escape. And it's like, what? And anyway, he convinces them. So they take off after him. And so they're going along. Well, then they get to they're in like a big Mercedes, you know, and they're driving. It's snowing. You know, they're going up in the mountains. There's like sliding around and stuff. And they're like, oh, man. You know, she's like, oh, they're right behind us. He's like, ah, you know. So he goes up there and they go. They're a little ways ahead of them. And they go to it's like the border between Germany and Switzerland. And there's like a mountain, a valley, and then another mountain. And there's cable cars going across there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the cover of the book or the cover of the movie comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So they go up there and the guys, they're like, we need to get across. The guy's like, oh, no. The Germans have ordered all cable stopped. And so they're like, no, we're going over there. And they lock him up in the thing. And so they see the car coming up the hill and they're like, oh, what are we going to do? And he goes, well, you guys go across, I'll jump on. And so, or they go, well, you know, there's a big lever, and you pull the lever, and like one car goes, they go back and forth, there's two. So he goes, I'll send you all over and I'll follow. So he sends it, and they go, you know, and then it goes over, and they get off, well, the car's over here, you know, it kind of comes around. And so meanwhile then, or while it's going over, the Germans come up, they're shooting at him, and he's in like this little wooden building with a couple windows. He's got the shutters shut, and he's like shooting through, and they're shooting, and they're kind of climbing around. There's a guy trying to get around, he shoots him. They're shooting in and stuff, and he shoots all of them but like one or two, and there's a guy trying to come around the front where the, you know, where the door, where it's open, and the cars are going out, and he sees him, he shoots him, and he falls off the mountain and stuff, and so finally it's down to like one guy. It's down to the Marston guy. He's killed all the other Nazis, and the train gets, the car gets back there, and so he sends it off, and he jumps on it like on the back, you know, and he crawls in, he's getting in, and they're shooting, and so he gets over there. Well, that guy finally breaks in, and it's like going midway. And so that guy, like, pulls the lever and starts reversing it, or he's past it. And so it starts coming this way. So this dude jumps from one to the other, so he's going to the right way. Well, then when he's over there, that guy starts shooting at him. He shoots that guy, and that guy falls down and dies. And then he gets over, and it's the end.
Well, the end.
Anyway, wow. I'll be honest with you, when I paid $1 for it, I didn't expect a lot out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why Criterion picked it up. It's a really good movie. I know I spoiled the whole thing for everybody.
They got away.
But Night Train to Munich, directed by Carol Reed, it is considered kind of a prototype of a lot of like Hitchcock kind of movies, because you know it had, you know, at the time that this came out, Hitchcock hadn't done some of his bigger movies, but it reminded me a lot of like a North by Northwest or like a Vertigo kind of thing. It's that very similar kind of thing. There's a booklet in here. There's a thick booklet in here. Anyway, I really dug the movie a lot. I didn't.
Of course, it's in black and white.
Oh yeah, some black and white. But there's a little. I should have read this before I talked about it. But anyway, it was produced by the British arm of 20th Century Fox. But, yeah.
Very cool. Never heard of it.
Yeah, I had not heard of it either. Oh, in fact, it was done by the same studio that Hitchcock was at when he was in England, and according to this, it says Hitchcock had left to America to make his first American film, but some film historians said undoubtedly Hitchcock would have made it had he not left for. It would have been given to him because it's a very Hitchcock kind of thing. Anyway, I really enjoyed it. It was good. I didn't expect when I bought it. I was like, I don't know anything about this, but it's a Criterion movie. So, not to say that every Criterion movie is a special movie, because there are some that I'm like, I don't know why this is a Criterion movie, but usually they're pretty special. At the very least, they look good, and this was a, you know, like I said, and occasionally you'll see them at like Half Price Books really cheap. Normally not though, but occasionally,
mm-hmm.
Because they know what they are. But yeah, good movie, Night Train to Munich.
Cool. You spoke of movies like that to be like predecessors to Bond. Do you see they got a new Bond actor? Supposedly it's going to be Aaron Taylor Johnson. You know who he is?
Mm-mm.
He's been in two things you've seen.
Okay.
He's 33 years old.
Okay.
White. He's a man.
Okay. That's white
important.
Man.
It's important. He's a man.
Well.
Number two, he's white, and number okay. three, he's some sort of British citizen.
Oh, that's.
So he checks to me all the boxes. I mean, if it's not a white guy that's British, then I don't think it's really Bond. He's the guy that was in Kick-Ass. He played the main Kick-Ass
What's
guy.
What's his name again?
And he also was Quicksilver in the Avengers movies. The Avenger movie. Not the Quicksilver in the X-Men, but the
right.
Quicksilver in the Avengers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Aaron Taylor Johnson. And supposedly they've offered him the role. He has to sign off on it. But they suspect he's going to.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. You know what? I think I saw his picture with a... potential Bond.
I think this might be a good hire. I mean, he's 33, not super old. That means he could probably do 10 or more years of maybe we can get 3 or 4 Bonds out of this guy. I hope.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Have you looked at Daniel Craig lately? One of his more recent photos. He has not aged well.
No.
So hopefully this guy can pick up the torch, and hopefully they can do a whole new thing. And get
How
away
can
from
that
the
be? Bond is dead.
Get away from the Bond. Get away from the Bond dying. Get away from the bad plants or whatever that they had with Remy Malek, whatever that thing was, the poison garden. Get rid of all that. Let's just do a Bond movie where he's not trying to save the world. He's just trying to do something.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be save the universe. It can just be like a Bond thing. I don't care if it's period. In the 60s,
I got here
now.
Bond in the multiverse.
But I'm very hopeful. Hopefully, this guy signs a contract, and hopefully, he's
going to
Bond.
I would. So, have you seen Ferrari?
No. Wait, Ferrari? No. Ferrari.
The new movie came out like around Christmas.
No, I've seen the Gran Turismo. I haven't seen the Ferrari.
Okay. The Ferrari is a period piece. It takes place in I think the 50s.
Hmm.
And I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
It's out on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen clips of it, and it makes me want a Bond movie set in the Cold War.
Yeah.
I'll just say in the Cold War. So it has to be pre, what year did the wall fall? 87, 86?
Yeah, something like that.
A Bond movie set in the 50s or 60s would be awesome. And they can even be vague about it. Just show old cars and
mm-hmm.
old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be, I mean, because to me, by the last Bond movie, the route they took with it has basically sealed the books on Bond. And I think the best way to save it is to go, this is not a sequel. This is a different Bond.
They've got people writing books still, so they could go with... The problem is, okay, they got this guy. Hopefully, this guy will be great. I think he's a good actor. I like what he's done so far. He was great in Kick-Ass. He's good as Quicksilver, whatever. He can do accents. You know,
yeah.
I hope they come up with a good story. I know they're writing a story right now. I hate it when the director has so much input on the story. I wish they would just have, these people are going to write the story. They know Bond. They know Bond backwards and forwards. Will you direct this? If you want, we're going to go to some other director. Given the director's so much input on what they want, their Bond and all this, I hate that. I hate it.
There's a Bond book. Now, I know they've done Bond books, you know, and when I was a kid, I read the John Gardner books to a point. I stopped at some point.
I've read most of them. I haven't read all of them.
But then for Bond's like 50th anniversary, they did a one shot. Mm-hmm. Have you read that? I think, is it called Devil May Care?
I haven't read it either,
but supposedly it's set like in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Is it Benson that wrote it?
It's somebody new. Okay. It's somebody new. All right. The Fleming family picked.
I'm pretty sure I've got that though.
Yeah.
All right. I've got two things to talk about. We can make it fairly quick. I picked this up at the comic shop this week. Do you have this?
No. You picked that up this week?
Can we do it this week? This is a facsimile of the Batman Treasury that was C-51 was its name. And what it is it's the Tales of the Demon or whatnot. It's the four issues that make up the first appearance of Ra's al Ghul. And so it's issues, it's Detective, I do believe, issues. Let's go to the...
It's big.
Let's go to the... So it's Batman and Robin. Batman with Robin the Teen Wonder. Number 232. Batman 242. Okay, 232 is when he comes in. And then it's three issues... about 10 issues later, there's a three in a row. So it's 232, then it's 242, and then it's 243 and 244 of the Ra's al Ghul story. And what it basically is, the first issue, Robin, something happens to Robin, he basically gets kidnapped, and then Ra's al Ghul shows up at the Batcave and announces himself that he's looking for Batman to help him find his daughter, and the way she was kidnapped and the way Robin was kidnapped sounds pretty similar. And so after he gets over this guy to break it into his Batcave, they kind of go on the lookout for, or on the trail of Talia al Ghul, who Batman hasn't met her yet, and Robin. And so it's Batman, Ra's al Ghul, and then Ubu, I think is his bodyguard, and they go to like Cairo or somewhere like that. And then at one point this leopard attacks Batman, and Batman has to kill a leopard. And then they go in the mountains, they go into Tibet, they go in the mountains, and one of the clues lead them there. And then they do finally find Robin, they do finally find Talia al Ghul, and you find out that Ra's al Ghul, Batman just figures out pretty quickly that Ra's al Ghul concocted this whole bullshit thing. And that's kind of the first issue. Then it goes into the three issues that are, you know, 10 issues later, they do a three issue arc about Ra's al Ghul and Talia al Ghul. And I really won't go into all that, but at one point it does show they think that Ra's al Ghul's dead. It shows the Lazarus pit. They leave and he comes back to life, of course. And anyways, it's pretty good. As you can see, it's treasury sized.
Yeah.
This, like I said, it's a reprint of the four issues that came out 60s, maybe, early 70s.
Early 70s, maybe.
Yeah. And then this is a facsimile of the treasury that came out in 77. I've seen the treasury. I don't have a copy of it, but...
So they collected them in the treasury, and this is a facsimile
of the treasury. Okay, yeah. Okay. That treasury, I think, was like $250. This is $14.99, of course, inflation.
Right.
But yeah. It does have a pretty cool wraparound cover.
Yeah. The original may have been square bound too.
And then it's got a really cool little intro by Jeanette Kahn talking about how important this story was, that she wrote this. This is the original intro that was in the, because it's a facsimile.
Oh.
So this is an intro that came with it, you know, originally. Oh, I guess these issues were in 71.
And I can guarantee you could not buy that treasury for $14.
No, not at all. Detective 395 was in 70, and the other issues were in 71. So, yes, it's almost, I said late
70s. Dude, that's so pretty cool. It's I need old, to pick that up.
It's old issues, and then, from, you know, 70, 71.
Did you get that locally at your shop?
Oh, yeah, dude.
Did they have extras?
I got it this week, yeah. But, yeah, so it's really cool. They do facsimiles. Marvel and DC both do facsimiles, but this is the first Treasury facsimile I've seen. I think they may have done some other ones, but I saw this on the shelf, and I was like, you know what? It's Denny O'Neill. They just, you know, hot off of the Green Arrow, Green Lantern. They were brought over, and it talks about, the Jeanette Kahn intro talks about how Batman had kind of fell into this campy thing after the TV show, and no one really cared for Batman that much, and Neil Adams had been working on, like, Brave and the Bold and made Batman more gritty to an extent, and no one was bothering him. He's kind of doing what he wanted. Like, if they said, hey, you know, draw Batman driving down the street, he'd make it at night.
He
would do stuff like that. He would do stuff to make it a little bit more darker.
Yep.
And no one was really calling him out on it because he's Neil Adams. They're letting him kind of get away with it. And Julia Schwartz, who was the editor, was like, no, son, you can't be taking the script and doing what you want until
sales figures
and the public, well, and the letters came in saying, oh, we really like what you're doing with it. And then, you know, wasn't the writer.
We like that Batman so much better than the other one.
Yeah. It wasn't the writer, though. It was like all the stuff that Neil Adams had changed up that he wasn't really supposed to.
Yeah.
And so that's when Julia Schwartz said, maybe we could have a hit with Batman. And so he pulled Neil Adams off of that and stuck him with Denny O'Neill and said, hey, do something like that for the Batman main title. And that's how this came to be.
Yeah.
And it talks about that in this intro that's on the inside front cover from Jeanette Kahn. Really cool package. I dug it, and I recommend it. It's got the original coloring, of course, but it's Treasury.
That's cool they didn't recolor it.
It's Treasury size, and it's got the Neil Adams. And, you know, some of the Neil Adams stuff is, some of the panels are kind of plain, but then you get panels like he drew this Batman, you know, with the mask, and you can see, like, arm hair and chest hair on him. And some of them are nowhere near that detailed, but then you get some close-ups of Ra's al Ghul's face that are pretty detailed, so it's kind of like whatever Neil wanted to. Some of the panels some of the panels are definitely stronger than others art wise. I mean, they're all good though, but some he really put more time in and more effort in. The only drawback, I sent up a photo of this to Barry and texted him a photo of it, and I was, hey, yeah, have you seen this? This is pretty cool. The only drawback to this is there's not one 2-page spread in here. How cool would a 2-page spread be this size?
Yeah.
A 2-page spread this size would be awesome, and there's not one damn...
Well, but it's what was in the original book.
No, I know, but I'm just saying. And I've got this in the Neil Adams books. I've got this in the Tales of the Demon Trade. I think it's in that. So I've got this stuff elsewhere at least a couple of times.
Yeah, but not that size.
But not this size. I just think this is just a... And I've got a few treasuries, so I'll just put this on the shelf, the rest of my treasuries. Hey, for $15, man, brand new.
Yeah, let me see that beast.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I sat down the other day and just kind of read it cover to cover. It's 76 pages.
Dude,
it's four issues.
Look at this, man.
I thought you might dig it.
Yeah, I dig this a lot. Yeah.
Dead air as Scott flips through the treasury. I've got something else to show you.
Okay.
I got one thing.
Go ahead.
So, and this is something that I thought people might want to hear. Remember our Art and Arcana book we've got, the Dungeons & Dragons book?
Yeah.
I've got the sort of a sequel. It's called Lore and Legends. Have you seen this?
No, I don't think I have seen that, actually.
So, whereas Art and Arcana focused primarily on the original Dungeons & Dragons and then the advanced, this focuses on the 5th edition. I know you're not a big fan of the 5th edition, but I got to tell you what's cool about this.
That is a thick book.
I'll tell you what's cool about this book.
What?
I saw this book at Kansas City at Barnes & Noble. I knew it was coming. I hadn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
And it was behind the counter.
Yeah.
And we're checking out. My wife bought something. I didn't buy anything. But I said, hey, can I take a look at that? So lady handed it to me, and I flipped through it. I thought, oh, this is nice. She said, you want to buy it? I said, no, I don't want to buy it. I mean, not from you guys.
Yeah.
On Amazon currently, this book has got a $50 price tag. On Amazon currently, it's $25. It's half off.
Oh, really?
And the artwork in this is spectacular.
Yeah.
There are paintings in here that are great. I'm not going to say jaw-dropping or...
Yeah, I mean, the quality of art...
I won't say breathtaking, but there are paintings in here that are spectacular. This book has got... It goes over...
I can't believe that they...
It goes over 5th edition, but it's got a lot of other things in it, too, besides that. So it goes... It talks about, like, the basically, like, the modules or, like... They don't really call modules anymore, but it's like the...
Yeah, they're like the adventure...
Expansion packs or whatever.
Well, they're hardcover. They're thick.
Yeah,
it's almost like a whole campaign.
Right, right. Is Ravenloft one of them? I think it might be.
I think there is a Ravenloft book.
Something like
out.
That. But this book's got full paintings. It's got pencil drawings. It's got pen and ink drawings. It's got character designs. It's got photographs of the stuff, of the actual pieces and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's got some cool stuff. It's got, do you know who Tom Morello is?
He's a musician for Nine Inch Nails or something like that.
No.
It's Rage Against the Machine.
Rage Against the Machine is also...
He's the lead singer, I think, isn't he?
He's a guitar player.
Okay.
But he's also, more importantly than that, he's in Audio Slave as the guitarist when Chris Cornell sung with him.
Okay.
And so, huge fan of them. Well, come to find out, he's a humongous D&D fan.
Oh, yeah.
He did the intro, and this is him... Here, he goes, yeah, that may or may not be me with the afro in the back. A black and white picture of when he played D&D.
He was in the D&D club at school.
In 1980. And he loves D&D. He quit playing. He talks about he played it for years, and then he picked up the guitar, became a famous musician, kind of went away. And then he started thinking about it maybe like 30 years later.
Yeah.
And he got invited to, you know, Joe... I think it's Manuelo. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he's like an actor. Well, that guy does a D&D thing. Well, he invited this guy to come play. And he's like, I don't know if I want to.
Oh, is it like a podcast or something?
Yeah, like
it's something that they
live podcast
or YouTube
film
or something. Yeah.
Well, this Joe guy, he's a famous actor. He's been in a lot of stuff. He does this. They invite this guy to come play because they invited the celebrities. This guy's like, I don't know if I want to. His wife goes, what are you talking about? Why don't you go out there and make some new friends? She basically kicked his ass out of the house.
Like his mom or something. Yeah.
And so he goes over there, kind of reluctantly, takes his character sheet with him, goes over there, this is all in the forward, and meets up with these guys, meets a lot of new friends, starts playing, and now he's like playing like 3 times a week.
Oh, God.
This guy's ate up with it. More so than me or you ever. I mean, he got...
When I was playing, you know,
we played twice a week when I played when I was a kid at school, in a school club.
Well, I never played twice a week.
I played
once a week.
Yeah.
The group my group basically just busted up recently.
Yeah. It's been more than
I mean, we played for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But, man, we were lucky if we could play 3 times a month.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
We're not
musicians. We're talking, we have jobs.
We're talking actors and musicians.
Right. They have plenty of time. In between gigs, they have plenty of time.
They got plenty of free time. And let's face it, these people that we're talking about, they've all made it. None of these people are struggling actors,
right.
Struggling musicians. These are all... Trust me, these are all A-list guys, right?
Yeah.
So, it's got an introduction, and I forgot who wrote the introduction. I didn't read that, though. The foreword by Tom Morello. I'm not a huge fan of that guy, but it's really good. It's got some pictures of the old stuff. It's got some screenshots of when they played it on different TV shows.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically Big Bang Theory and things like that. Here's the club, and there's that Joe, what's his name here? Joe Manganiello or whatever. This Deborah Ann Wall, who was...
she was in...
Daredevil.
And she was in...
True Blood.
True Blood, yeah.
And here's Brian Posehn. He's been in a lot of stuff. I actually saw him at Comic-Con up in Kansas City.
Yeah,
just walking around.
Wasn't he like in...
He's in...
King of Queens or one of those kind of shows?
Yeah, and he's also in Big Bang Theory sometimes. So there's some famous people in this shot that get together and play. So it's got some shots of that. It's got plenty of... oh, you know who this is? We've met this guy, Scott Kurtz.
Oh, that's Scott Kurtz.
Scott Kurtz with his group, yeah. And it's got all kind of like... And I've never played 5th edition, but this book is really cool. And as you said, it's thick. It's like 400 pages, I think, on thick paper. It's over 400. It's like 410 pages on thick paper.
I was shocked when I saw how thick that was.
And the paintings in here are... some of them are spectacular.
Any beef I have with 5th edition is not with the art. Except for maybe there's too much of it.
Yeah, for $25, this book is a MF and steal. Yeah. It's really a steal for $25. I don't. Oh, and it's even got like okay. So you know in Stranger Things, there's the
Demogorgon.
Demogorgon. It's got the Demogorgon thing in here.
Oh yeah.
Of the original.
Oh, from
the
original Greyhawk or whatever.
It's got
the original pencil drawing.
It's got the original. It's got the Tiamat original drawing from Monster Manual.
Oh yeah.
And there's a little Ark and Arcana photo of that book. Yeah. Some more Big Bang to talk about in here. Here's a online thing that they do. And this guy here is Jim Zub. I've never seen a picture of Jim Zub, but Jim Zub's writing Conan right now. A very good Conan writer. But it's got him in here. Here's the Stranger Things box set. I've actually got a copy of this. I got it at Ollie's.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it comes with a little Demogorgon figure several years ago.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
So
it's the basic Dungeons & Dragons, but it's the special edition. Mm-hmm.
There's a really cool shot of a beholder in here that I just dug. Tons and tons and tons of artwork in here. This book may be better than the previous one. At least it's good. Freaking solid. Dude, $25, man.
I wonder why it's so cheap. Let me see that beast.
It's not light. It's a heavy book.
I will not drop it on myself.
That came in an Amazon box with no padding. It took no damage. It took no damage. The corners aren't damaged at all, which is amazing.
That is amazing. I bought, when we were in Santa Fe, I bought a sketchbook, and it came apart before I ever even drew in it. The spine broke, and so I wrote, and it wasn't cheap, so I wrote to the company complaining. And they sent me another one in a box, unpadded. Every corner was banged up. And I just threw my hands up in disgust. Like, they're never going to get
this. In disgust, yes.
I mean, I told them, I said, well, you know, I just told them, I said, this is crappy. I'm never going to buy one of your sketchbooks again. I said, I'll put duct tape on it and use it. But this is terrible. You guys got to do something about this. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, we're sorry about
that. Is that a mind flare?
Yep.
Yeah.
We'll send you another one. A roper. God, I know these animals.
But look at those paintings.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
Some are, like, spectacular.
Yeah. Yeah, they go all out. Again.
And think about where Dungeons & Dragons start out with artwork-wise.
Yeah.
They start out really bad.
Oh, well, the original... Oh, there's the original Demogorgon.
Yeah, that's what I was talking
about.
The
original books back in the 70s... It was like Gary Gygax was paying high school kids like $3 to draw.
Yeah.
Can you draw a dragon for $3? You know, well, you've got that art in a can of books that talks
about
that. Yeah,
that they've come a long ways.
They have come a long ways.
I mean, those paintings, some of those are like almost like...
Got pictures of miniatures.
Almost gallery quality on some of this
they
stuff.
They have... well, you know what's... There's controversy in Dungeons & Dragons... Because they're
and some few maps in there too.
Yeah, it's a bunch of module stuff. Yeah, I mean the maps nowadays. There's people online that do maps that are crazy looking. I mean stuff like that.
That almost looks like something from a mouse guard.
Yeah, there's controversy Dungeons & Dragons because a lot of people they're wanting to go now. It's cool the first set of dice. They're going now, they're going to do this thing called Dungeons & Dragons 1. They're not going to do like 5th edition, because 5th edition has been around forever. They're going to do, instead of doing
well, what
like
happened
a 6th edition.
What happened to, okay, so 2 would be advanced, right?
No.
Oh, there's a separate 2?
Okay, so
I played advanced.
So that was advanced. Okay, so like the three boxes that were in the front cover are original. Called original.
That's what you had from your cousin.
That's what I had when I was a kid.
Right. And then I had advanced.
And so then they had the there were a couple different versions of Basic that came out, and then Advance came out. And then they redid Advance with new covers, like in the 80s.
So that's two?
No. The contents are all the same. Okay. Then Second Edition came out, like, in the late 80s, I think. Maybe late 80s.
Okay.
That went along for a while. And then in 2000, they came out with the Third Edition.
Oh, that's a big gap then.
It was a big gap. Okay. It may have been like 11 years, or it was probably between 11 and 8 years, the gap.
Okay.
So then they came out with the Third Edition, and they changed some stuff. You know how armor class is ascending? In other words, like 0 is your best armor class? Mm-hmm. They reversed it. And the numbers go higher.
It makes more sense as it goes higher.
It does make more sense because you're not rolling on a table. You're rolling against the number.
Yeah.
So that happened with Third Edition.
Mm-hmm.
And then real quick, they came out with 3.5. And a lot of people, well, when Third Edition came out, they released what they called the open source document. And they said anyone can use any part of the dungeon, because basically, you can't copyright role-playing game rules. You can't copyright game rules. You can copyright Mind Flayers. You can copyright Demogorgons. You can copyright Ropers. Mm-hmm. But you can't copyright the mechanics, you know?
Hmm.
And so what happened was when they came out with Third Edition, and then they came out with Fifth, then
we skipped four, whatever.
The 3.5. They did 3.5, believe it or not, like 2 years after the third.
Mm-hmm.
And people weren't happy about that. Well, then sales tanked. So then they came up with a fourth edition. The fourth edition, they brought in a lot of video game elements.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to, so like when we played, you were like a fighter, you were a wizard, you were, you had classes, and then like in second edition, you could do multi-classing. Third edition, they were like, they tried to be more realistic with it. They got away from like, kind of like knights and the round table and Merlin, that kind of thing. They got more to this idea of like, if you're a fighter, you might have like different kinds of armor. They got more like this kind of style of art where the characters didn't look more like your stereotypical knights, but they were more like stylized, I guess, mm-hmm. you know, and moved away from kind of that European look, I guess, to more like a fantasy look. And so with fourth edition, they went farther that way, and they also brought in stuff like, they tried to make it like a video game, and I've never played fourth edition, but they did a lot with like movement. I mean, think about like playing Final Fantasy Tactics. They tried to make it more like that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And some people liked it, but most people hated it. Well, then they came out with 5th edition. And then 5th edition was kind of chugging along.
Is that
then
what we're doing now?
Or
is
that's what they're doing now.
There's nothing past that.
Not yet.
Mm.
So 5th edition came out. Well, when it was out, then like Stranger Things came along.
Mm-hmm.
And that really kind of got it going again.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's all these podcasts and stuff. Well, now, you know, 5th edition, like, people that are playing got their 5th edition books. The modules are not like a $10 thing. They're like a $50 thing, and it's a thick hardcover book.
Yeah.
And you might play one of those for a year, you know. And so they kind of back themselves in a corner.
That's a lot of bang for your buck, though.
Right. It's a lot of bang for your buck, but their cash income isn't, like, it steady.
Well, they could be if people use miniatures.
People do use miniatures, and they really push miniature play. I mean, our group always used miniatures, mm-hmm. but we had like a big map, and he'd draw it, and we'd have our minute, you know. But so like now your character sheets are all online. You have to use an iPad to play, which I hate. The reason why is because your character, if you get stunned, then it affects all these different other things. And so you have to apply a stun condition.
Oh, I see.
So there's a lot of math.
So it'll
automatically do all that stuff.
Gotcha. You have to just subscribe to that service?
You can do 3 characters for free.
Really?
Yeah. But if you do a 4th character, you got to bump one off. You know.
Is that per person or per party?
That's per person.
Okay.
And like our guy, our dungeon master, he subscribed. Mm-hmm. And so he got like a digital copy of all the books. Mm-hmm. We got digital copies. He got digital copies of the maps. There was a lot that you got. And they wanted to push to more towards a subscription model.
Yeah, but.
And so there's like rumors like the next D&D will be like, instead of buying books, you'll subscribe to them. Mm-hmm. And people are like, no. The books are $50 a piece. Mm-hmm. So the core rule books, if you pay full cover, which I didn't, but I paid, I probably got $100 in my core rule books. Mm-hmm. You got $100 and you're like, well, I've been playing with this group now for a while. Well, so now what they do is they go, well, we don't have an edition. It's called Dungeons & Dragons 1. Because for a long time they're talking about 6th edition. Now they're going to do Dungeons & Dragons 1, supposedly. And their idea is there's no more editions. It's just this. And they'll update it because everybody's subscribed. You just update it.
And people basically, are like, basically, it's like a video game sort of. A video game service.
Well, yeah, it's like subscribing to. Mm-hmm. And a lot of software is subscription nowadays. At work, all of our drawing software is subscription based. I hate it because you don't own anything. Mm-hmm. You know.
And then they can do an update and it might break something.
They can do an update or like, okay, so at work.
Updates suck, man.
I had to get a new computer. At work, mm-hmm. this is how crazy this is. I have a computer. They paid a lot of money for it years ago. Runs fine. I got a new hard drive not long ago. It runs great. Have no beef with it. They took it from me because they're upgrading to Windows 11. Windows 11 won't run on my old computer. 10 runs fine. Windows 11 won't. We've corporate policy. For security, we've got to be the latest version of Windows. They had to replace like 60 computers at my work. I had the oldest computer in our company, by the way. There was one machine that was as old as mine, and it was an engraving machine. But I was like, I don't want to get a new one. And they're like, no, you got a new one. So I said, will you sell me this one? And so I haven't got it yet, but I think I'm gonna pay like $300 for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a long story about that, but I mean it's I hate the subscription. I hate the updates because to me if it works, I mean and I get it at work. You know we're dealing with other companies and stuff. But like at the house, it's like, man, why would I update if everything I have is working? Why do I need to update? There's no need.
You know, my laptop is from 2016.
Oh, really? I bet my computer, I bet my desktop in the house is older than that. I'm still running Windows 7.
Yeah, I think, I don't know what my Windows on it is. I don't recall which one it is. But anyway, long story short, so I got my laptop, bought it new, 2016. It works fine. You know, there's no viruses on it that I'm aware of. Everything runs smooth, blah, blah, blah. Well, probably a year and a half ago, I started getting these notices.
Oh, yeah, that, yeah, well.
It's going to, they're not going to support that system anymore.
Yeah, you must have 7. Yeah. Because I got that.
And then, so I said, okay, well, what I got to do? And they go, oh, well, you got to buy this
10
expensive program.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want that. Well, now, since they're not updating anything, now nothing's going to work. So if I could get a virus on it easier, you know, that kind of a thing. So I'm very. I don't want to put it on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I do stuff, you know, I do like iTunes, I do music-wise, not buying stuff-wise, but my own stuff.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And then I do stuff for the podcast on it. I try to keep it off the, and this is, a lot of stuff I do is offline.
Yeah.
I always have it turned off, the internet, because I don't want anything to happen to it. And I feel like if I don't go to sites on there, maybe I'll keep it, you know, fresh. It's still got a lot of room on the hard drive.
Oh, yeah.
It still runs smoothly. But dang, I don't want to necessarily buy a whole new one. You know, that one's, I feel like that one's still running good, but oh, we don't support anything on it anymore. So that's nonsense.
Yeah.
I feel like it's like, what if they tell me, well, your car's your car's old and now we're not going to make whatever for your car anymore. We're not going to make gas or we're
going to Yeah, I was going to say, think about the people that said, when they said, we're going to stop selling leaded gas.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, I got my 55 Chevy, and it didn't have hardened valve seals.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Go buy an additive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate all that kind of crap. And I know it's like, you're just old or whatever.
Well, no, but it's also money.
That's the thing. Yeah. And
it's also curtain. It's also, not only is it money, But it's taking everything off your old one and putting it onto your new one. Or, yeah. You know what I mean? Because all the contents, everything you want to, everything you want to use, all your apps, everything you want to use.
Some of them won't work.
Some won't work. And you're right. And like the I don't say heads up display, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the interface is different. All that
everything's
stuff.
Different. That's why I want to update iTunes, because iTunes, every time I did it in the past, it always had looked different. Things were wrong, in my mind wrong from what I was used to. I'm not updating iTunes, and I'm not getting a new. I'm going to hold out and not get another laptop.
We'll see. And so people have done that with this D&D 1.
Mm-hmm.
And their thing is, so I told you, like with 3, they made this they said it was open source. In other words, anyone. Mm-hmm. In fact, you could go online and download a PDF that had all the Dungeons & Dragons rules in it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the open source document.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have like some of the monsters, but it or some of the name spells, but it had all the stuff. And so what happened is when they did that, all these people started making clones. So a big thing now is people playing retro clones, which are clones of earlier editions of D&D.
Mm-hmm.
They just are using the open source rules, and they're you know, and I've got, in fact, I've got a book called Osric. It's like Open Source Rule Index Compendium. And it's, you can play AD&D with it, but it's there, but it's not Dungeons and Dragons. It's not called Dungeons and Dragons, but you can you're playing AD&D when you play it.
Mm-hmm.
And so out of that, when they did that third edition, something sprang off called Pathfinder, which was a different, it's a competitor to D&D, one of the biggest competitors. And
I thought that was a module. Is that a module?
No, Pathfinder is a, and there's a big, there's the I've talked on here, I think, about the Glass Cannon, which is a, they play Pathfinder,
mm-hmm.
and it's its own version of D&D, but it came out of that open source rules, because when they came out with 4th, people were like, I don't like that. And so this company came along and said, well, play this instead,
mm-hmm.
and it's their version of that. And so, like Hasbro stock has tanked. I say tanked. It's gone down because people are like, I'm not switching to D&D 1.
Mm.
I've got my book. I mean, think about, you know, we talk about not upgrading with computers. Books. Man, you got your books. You know, you and I could be playing Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. We both have the books. Nothing's making us go, make us play 5th edition.
It's almost like when Sony came out with the PlayStation 3 and was like, well, some of these PlayStation 3s won't play 1 and 2 games anymore.
Right.
Or actually most of them won't. I think only a couple of them did.
Yeah.
And then after that, they quit doing it. And it's like, well, I still got all these games. Well, those games don't exist anymore as far as Sony can care.
Yeah, Sony only cares about selling you new games.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. That kind of stuff will burn you out to where you're like, you know what? I'll just play my Atari. You guys can suck it.
Or yeah, just like, I'll just keep going with what I got going on, and I'm not going to put any more money into this nonsense, because at some point you just tap out.
Well,
it's almost like a lot of people I know, like a guy I work with, he's into comics, not as heavily as me and you probably, but he's into comics, and he won't read singles anymore because he's like, you know, I don't want to. I'm not bagging anymore.
You pay so much for him. I don't blame him.
And he'll wait. He's like a trade waiter. And like, if I tell him something's good, he'll buy the trade or whatever. But you know, I mean, that's a fair. Somewhere you just tap out and go, I've had enough. I'm not doing it
anymore. Well, on comics, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think the single is the ideal way to read a comic, a superhero comic.
It's pricey, though.
But they've made it so pricey, and I've been talking about this X-Men Epic Collect, and I've been going through it, and if you think about reading those, like when we were kids, as singles, it makes sense. It was never intended to be collected as a trade.
Right.
It was like stories. It was episodic. It was kind of like a soap opera.
Right.
You know, it came out, and it fired. Excuse me, fired you up, and the next month, the next one came out, and it was a continuing story, and Chris Claremont was a master of weaving in this subplot.
Yeah.
So there's always kind of something going on in the background that you wanted to find out, but it wasn't like, here's the first part of this arc, here's the second part, third part, fourth part, and now we're going to collect it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just this ongoing thing, and to me, that's, like as a kid, that was perfect. But it was affordable. Now it's like, what are books? $5? You know, you're like, well, I could spend $20 to collect 4 singles, or I could buy the trade for 20, yeah, you know, and it's like, if I got the trade, at least it's on my shelf. And you know, nothing carries over. I mean, once they do the arc, it's like a whole new creative team usually, and a whole new, so they've kind of written themselves out of that, you know, market, which is, in my opinion, ridiculous. But that's a different thing. But anyway, so Dungeons and Dragons 1 is, there, I mean, there's a lot of, I watch a lot of Dungeons and Dragons YouTube stuff. And yeah, there's a lot of controversy. And
when does that hit?
I don't know. I think sometime later this year. Mm. You know, and Hasbro.
You don't hear a lot about, I mean, I'm not necessarily.
I mean, Hasbro's laid off a bunch of, the Dungeons and Dragons branch or whatever. Hasbro's laid off a bunch of people lately.
I'm not in the realm to pick up any, you know, even now, I used to see a lot of video game commercials. I don't think I see as many video game commercials as I used to. Definitely don't see anything about, like, Hasbro going, oh, Dungeons and Dragons 1's coming.
Dungeons and Dragons,
You don't see anything like that. I mean, I wouldn't have no idea about it.
I think, well, here's what's going to happen. There's all these podcasts and all, like, the deal with the guy that you were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of those that are real popular.
Yeah.
And so there's like controversy, and I don't watch any of those, because celebrities playing D&D, it's like, who cares?
It gets other people watching it, though.
It does get a lot of people watching it. They have big numbers.
It's important enough they put it in this book.
It is important to the sales of the books, for sure, and to get people fired up. And people have said, well, we're going to switch to Pathfinder. We're going to keep playing whatever. I guarantee you, Hasbro's going to go to all those people and go, you're going to switch. We will pay you. You know, and once these people start switching, then fans will start switching, probably.
Well, they could do a thing where, like, they go, hey,
trade in your books.
Well, not that, but I'm like telling these celebrities, hey, let's beta. You want to beta test it on one of your, you know?
And I'm sure they're doing that already.
That makes sense.
My group broke up. And I really enjoyed playing. It was a lot of fun. But honestly, one thing about 5th edition is, dude, and one of the guys in my group was real strategic about how he did stuff. He was the guy that'd be like, okay, I got a stick and I'm tapping on this, tapping on. I mean, he was very strategic. He was an archer. He'd sit in the back and shoot arrows at stuff, you know? But I played almost so my thing was, I'm going to play like I would have played when I was a kid. So I wasn't, we had a barbarian that was always charging stuff. I wasn't quite like that, but also played pretty risky. And, you know, I've decided it's almost impossible to get killed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had a wizard. He was, I think he got to 4th or 5th level. He could levitate, he could turn invisible, he could, mm-hmm. you know, there was all kinds of stuff. Shoot, you know, you have cantrips that you could just shoot fireball after fireball after
out
fireball.
Your ass.
Yeah, it's so, I mean, the power, and you can go in and min max your character, and you can multi class, and there's all kinds of weird, you can be all these weird races. You can be a half dragon. You can be a half orc. You can be
How did
a human have sex and have a half dragon?
I think the dragon would just
obliterate it.
Split you in half, wouldn't it?
Something. Well, however it happened, or half orc even, which I think half orcs were.
I was assuming the dragon was the male. Maybe the dragon is the female.
I don't know how it works.
It's a drunkard. Is that a sheep? It's a dragon. That's a sheep.
What's the equivalent of Arkansas in the D&D world? But anyway, all that stuff. And you know, people have their characters that's fine-tuned, but they can do that. Well, the rules allow them to do it, but also their character becomes, I don't want to say it's impossible to kill, because characters die, but it's the odds of dying are not near like it was when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, you know how when we were kids, we'd be like, oh, you find this magic sword that does, you know, 20d20 of damage every time, or 3d20 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how the rules are now. You know, it's just ridiculously. Everybody's got infravision or can see in the dark. Oh, gotcha. You know, it's just, you know, and wizards, you can do cantrips, which are, you know, normally you do your spells and then you got to sleep and then you can do more spells. You got to rest and study. Mm-hmm. Well, cantrips you can do as many times as you want.
Cantrip?
Yeah, it's called a cantrip. And it's like one of them, I think Lightning Bolt is one you can pick, or there's stuff. And so you can just do that over and over. So you don't, if you're a wizard, you don't have to kind of like hold back.
I'm going to levitate over this mud and not get dirty while I make a storm that's going to, you know, whatever. And I'm going to throw some lightning.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll turn invisible and I'll levitate, which, I mean, you levitate, you go straight up.
Yeah.
Can't fly.
Mm-hmm.
But you can turn invisible, and of course, if you attack somebody, you turn visible. So but you can still levitate and like get high and be like, "Oh, there's something over there."
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I just found that it was you get it, the characters were too, in my mind, were too customized and too powerful. And to me, it kind of took away some of the fun of the game.
Yeah.
And it just got the whole thing about, you know, you're stunned and it does all this different. I always felt like I was trying to catch up with what was going on in terms of, you know, versus having a character sheet and being like, okay, I know what all my, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. But I mean, a lot of people play. I mean, I think it's more popular now than it ever was.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, well, or at least a couple of years ago was. And I think a lot of people still play it, but it's just they're not selling stuff because, and now what's happened is like, so people will buy a book that's an adventure book or whatever they call it, and it's thick, you know, and it'll take you a year to go through it, and they'll go through it, and then they'll sell it like a half price. If you have half price books, you can buy tons of them.
Mm.
And so, and for a while, when we were playing, if I saw one at half price books, I'd get it. So I probably have 5 or 6 of the adventure books.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean...
Nuts of 5?
Volume 5? 5, yeah, mm-hmm. 5. And so, I think that they sell... What I'm saying is, I don't think they're selling as much because people are just circulating those books around,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Do they have cool art like this book's got in it?
Yeah, I mean, all the art looks like that. Oh, I mean, wow. The production quality is pretty high. Everything's hardcover.
I'm going to start flipping through them.
Yeah.
But where do those books go for new? 50?
About 50, I think. I think some of the
they're not as thick books, as this thing.
No, they're a little bit thick. A little bit thinner than that.
Well, it was interesting talk of some Dungeons & Dragons. Let's wrap this episode up right here. As always, I've been your host, D.L. Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
Yo, come back next week for another all-new episode. Check out our blog at motherfictionthepodcast.blogspot.com, where I'll have some photos of what we've talked about tonight. And... you know, why go to wherever you're going to get your podcast episodes? Just go to our blog and you can just listen to us right through our blog.
But if you do go someplace to get your podcast, please take a second to leave a review and subscribe on your podcast app. This will help other people find the podcast. Also, thank you once again to our sponsor, our long-term, long-time sponsor, Area 51 Comics and Toys in Pensacola, Florida, on Navy Boulevard.
Did he just re-up for another year of sponsorship?
He did. No, nice. No, it's 3 years this time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope we can go through with 3 years. We may owe some money back.
We may. Nope, he knows the rules.
Oh, no take backs.
We get the check and...
it's cash, it's gone.
Yeah, it's cash. Good luck getting it from us.
Yeah.
If you want it back, Jim Bob. Could
drive up here.
I don't know. Somebody named Jim Bob, you better give them their money back.
All right, with that, we'll say, hey, come back next week for another all-new episode. See ya. We're out of here.